The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now it's time to begin the March 2022 issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. The cover this month features a young lady holding a dog on top of a rock promontory, looking out on the beautiful hills of western North Carolina. And the theme is The Blowing Rock. How a landmark and a legend built North Carolina's first travel attraction. Well, I imagine we'll have a few other things along the way. I think this is a month where we have five readings instead of four, so we'll get some extra material to work with. Well, I'm going to start, as we always do, with the From Elizabeth column by Elizabeth Hudson, editor-in-chief, Places of the Heart. In 1990, my mum closed the crafts shop she'd owned for 20 years and took a job as a salesperson at Rhodes Furniture in Greensboro. She'd never sold furniture before, and it was the first time she'd worked for someone else since waitressing as a teenager in the 60s. It had to have been hard, a change like that, but my mum embraced it. Rhodes carried several North Carolina manufactured lines of furniture, Broyhill, Klausner, Thomasville, Kincaid. But my mom's favorite was the Bob Timberlake collection, then made by Lexington Furniture. She was drawn to the arts and crafts style, which complemented the antiques already in our house, and my dad loved the book, too. When the Timberlake Gallery opened in Lexington in the mid-90s, my parents were some of the first people at the opening. They made a day of it, having lunch at the barbecue center, popping into shops on Main Street, and picking up a bag of Red Bird sticks at the candy factory to eat in the car on the way home. They spent their afternoon browsing furniture. At the showroom, my mom swooned over a solid cherry poster bed, so rich and warm, and with her earrings from her new job, she bought it. Her earnings from her new job, she bought it. She did not trade the earrings. After years of sleeping on my great-grandmother's handed-down wrought iron bed, my parents were excited to bring home something new, something belonging to them alone. She kept on working, driving from Ashboro to Greensboro every day, putting in hours on holidays and weekends, and when she could afford more, she bought more, adding nightstands, a gentleman's chest of drawers, a pottery hutch in the dining room. My dad accompanied her on every trip, and Lexington became their place. Lunch together, shops on Main Street, candy or ice cream at the end of the day. I've thought of the two of them often when I travel around North Carolina, how my dad, with his artistic eye, loved to look at window displays, how my mom, with her furniture knowledge, could spot a good antique, how they both had a sweet tooth and ended the day with a treat. I never went along with them. Those days belonged to them alone. A couple of months ago, for my birthday, my mom and I took a trip to Blowing Rock. It was a beautiful day for walking, and we spent our time shopping on Main Street, admiring the window displays. We picked up a slice of fudge from Kilwin's to share on the ride home. For a moment, I got a glimpse of how my mom and dad must have spent their days together. For lunch, we headed over to Chitola Resort, to Timberlake's restaurant. My mom had never been there, and well, I wish you could have seen her face when we walked in. The restaurant is filled with that Timberlake furniture so familiar to her, tables and chairs and the same solid oak and cherry that she'd filled our house with. I could see how much it reminded her of the beautiful home that she and my dad had created. We chose a table next to the fireplace, overlooking the lake. My mom pointed to the wooden beams on the ceiling. "Just like what we had in our den," she reminded me, her voice carrying her back to another place. We ate our fish and chips and watched the resident swans, the male and female named Moses and Bertha, the ones who'd settled there on this beautiful lake, the place that seems to belong to them alone. And now, as I do on the first reading of every month, I'd like to interpret the photo essay for you, for those of you who cannot see it or see it well enough to fully appreciate it. Hope you enjoy my audio description of the imagery. Wonder Women. In March, Women's History Month celebrates the heroines whose bravery, compassion, and determination have shaped the story of North Carolina and the world. Written by Rebecca Waltz. Capture here under the first image. Daffodils are harbingers of spring at Dorothea Dix Park in Raleigh. Around Durham, murals honoring Polly Murray, including Polly Murray in the World on the opposite page, brighten the sides of businesses and public buildings. Close up here, in focus of a daffodil against a pale blue Carolina sky. It is bright yellow. It's perfectly vertical on both sides, like a cylinder, and then it splits away at the top, like it bursts out toward the sun. And then there are several petals on the side that are laid back. Some of them are in the shade, so they're a little darker yellow, and some are in the sunlight, and they're full yellow. And down below, on either side of the stalk, are two green leaves sticking up almost as high as the flower itself. There's some more green leaves to the right, out of focus, and behind it, another daffodil stem. Polly here is a person with a face which has glasses on it. And the colors are... It's an interesting photo in that the imagery is basically done by small, full strokes of different colors, especially down below from the neck down. You'll see just a little splash and a little splash and a little splash, but they're all different colors side by side. And you'll see kind of a white collar on this person and a purplish shirt. And then the rims of the glasses and the hair on the person's head. Not really... You can't really tell the gender of this individual by looking at this picture, and the name is Polly, P-A-U-L-I, Polly Murray. And it's done against a brick wall, and all the bricks are painted, and they have these splotches of colors just exploding out from the face. Overleaf, Virginia Dare, 1587 to unknown. Little is known about the life of the first English colonist born in the Americas. 9 days after Virginia Dare came into the New World, her grandfather, Roanoke Colony Governor John White, left the island for England. Upon his return 3 years later, he discovered that Virginia and more than 100 other colonists had vanished, leaving behind nothing but two carvings, the word Croatan on one tree, and the letters C-R-O on another. The fate of what came to be known as the Lost Colony remains a mystery. But Virginia's memory lives on. Dare County and the Virginia Dare Memorial Bridge, which spans Croatan Sound, are named in her honor. These pictures are at Elizabeth Gardens in Fort Raleigh National Historic Site, National Park Drive in Manteo. They have a website, Elizabethangardens.org. Now, the first picture here is a painting, and it says, Virginia Dare was baptized on August 24th, 1587. A statue in her memory survived a shipwreck and fire before making its way to Fort Raleigh in Manteo, where it stands beneath a live oak in the Elizabethan Gardens. So in this picture, we have a lot of people gathered in a building with wood-hewn ceiling timbers and a stone fireplace on the right-hand side. There's a table on the floor. The floor, you can see, has it might have been in part of a barn or something, because it appears to be straw on the floor. And there's a religious figure in a white robe holding Virginia, who has one arm raised. And the man is dipping his hand in a bowl of water, ready to baptize her. And the proud parents stand there looking on, along with all the townsfolk in their finery. And of course, everybody is all dressed up. And there's a man on the right-hand side leaning against a chair, and he has removed his sword and its scabbard and laid it against the chair alongside a book, probably the Bible, and he's watching on also. And then there's the statue here of what they imagine Elizabeth grew up to, looking like as a young lady. I don't know how she would like this particular statue or not. It's hard to tell how dressed or undressed she is by the way the statue is designed, but it's a very white statue against a tree that is huge in the background. Indian women fight back. In a bold patriotic move in 1774, 51 Edenton women signed an agreement to boycott British tea and cloth. Organized political action by women was almost unheard of at the time, and the event was satirized in an unflattering London political cartoon that's shown above. Nearly a century later, Harriet Jacobs, shown here to the right, an enslaved woman living in Edenton, fended off repeated advances from her master, who threatened to sell her children if she did not submit. For 7 years, Jacobs hid herself in a crawl space so small that she couldn't stand upright. She eventually escaped to the free North, where she became involved with abolitionists. In 1861, she published an autobiography, Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl, widely recognized as the most extensive slave narrative written by a woman. If you're interested in following this up more, you can go to ehcnc.org or harrietjacobs.org. The picture of Harriet here is of an elderly woman dressed in a period dress with a kind of a shawl over a brown dress that comes down to her feet. She's sitting in an armchair. She has white hair, and she's looking out at us with determined eyes. And up above is the satirist painting that was published in Britain of them signing this long statement on a table while other people danced around and drank and drinking out of bowls and talking with another, and a dog is licking a little girl's face, etc. On the right-hand side of this page, a picture which I've seen many times in this magazine, or one very much like it, rather, and have seen in person on a number of occasions, the home of Penelope Barker, opposite page, who organized the Edenton Tea Party, was moved to its present location, overlooking Albemarle Sound in 1952. Today, the house serves as Edenton and Chowanne County's Welcome Center. It's the bay comes in here and curves around, and the road is very near the street at this point, and somebody is standing on where it curves around and taking a picture across this little inlet over here of this two-story house, which has white front to it and balconies or porches that go the full length from left to right on both levels. And then there's a little more space that goes out to the end of a little peninsula there where there's some other things. And there's some of those famous cedar trees that grow in that area. They're right out there almost like an island by themselves. They manage to withstand all of the water and the beating and the wind and everything, and they stand upright. Must have very deep roots. Here's a close-up picture of a daffodil, very similar to what I said before. Dorothea Dix, 1802 to 1890, or rather 1887. While teaching a Sunday school class in a Massachusetts correctional facility in 1841, Dorothea Dix witnessed inhumane treatment of mentally ill patients who were often incarcerated due to lack of proper care facilities. Her subsequent work as a champion for people with mental illnesses led to the creation of 32 institutions in the United States, including what became the North Carolina Hospital for the Mentally Ill, which opened in 1856 as the first such institution in the state. Although Dix did not allow the facility to be named in her honor, it was renamed Dorothea Dix Hospital a century later. Dix died in 1887 in a hospital that she had founded. Dorothea Dix Park. I think it's now owned by the city of Raleigh, isn't it? It's been turned over to the city to turn into a park. It seems like a project that's going on for years. You can learn more, I guess, at the website here, dorotheadixpark.org. It's on Richardson Drive in Raleigh. It says the site of the former Dorothea Dix Hospital, which closed in 2012, is now Raleigh's largest city park with 308 acres that include an open meadow, fields of flowers, an oak grove, and a dog. So this picture is shot from the daffodils across a field, across a highway, trees, and then the city of Raleigh in the background. Here we have Polly Murray, 1910 to 1985. The Reverend Dr. Polly Murray, raised by her aunt. That's why I said it said, couldn't quite tell the gender from the picture. And grandparents in Durham, was a lawyer, activist, writer, and poet who achieved numerous firsts. She was the first black woman to become an Episcopal priest in the United States. She graduated at the top of her class from Howard University's law school as the only woman in the program. She later worked closely with notable civil rights activists, including the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and was outspoken about the lack of female leadership in civil rights organizations. In 1961, she was appointed by President John F. Kennedy to the Committee on Civil and Political Rights. She wrote frequently on the topic of racial discrimination, including states' laws on race and color, called the Bible for Civil Rights Lawyers by Thurgood Marshall, and Proud Shoes, the story of an American family about her grandparents' experiences with racism. The Polly Murray Center for History and Social Justice at 906 Carroll Street in Durham, PollyMurrayCenter.com. There's a bigger view of that picture that was on the cover, and there are words written on the wall also. It says, true community is based upon equality, it looks like it says naturality and reciprocity. It affirms the richness of individual diversity as well as the common human ties that bind us together. It's a little hard to read because part of it has a white, it's white letters and a white background. And there's a reference to the true community image up here, and it says, and the one below are two of five murals created between 2007 and 2009 as part of a collaborative public art project. And there's a completely different image of her down below. And then there's a photograph of her at her desk with bookshelves behind her and an impressive cross, perhaps made out of wood, on the back of the bookshelves. Ava Gardner, who lived from 1922 to 1990. She was often considered the most photographed woman in the world. She was certainly one of the most famous and most striking actresses of her day. But despite her megastar status, Ava Gardner was at heart a down-to-earth country girl from the small community of Grabtown near Smithfield, where she returned to visit her family often. She leveraged her fame to support causes she believed in, including equality for women and people of color. She was a lifetime member of the NAACP, backed presidential candidate Henry Wallace, who was in favor of desegregation, and openly denounced the House Un-Americans Activity Committee. Above all, Gardner lived fully, loved wildly, and had no regrets. "The truth is, honey, I've enjoyed my life," she wrote in Ava, My Story. "I've had a hell of a good time." The Ava Gardner Museum is at 325 East Market Street in Smithfield. There's a picture of her posing I don't know exactly what she has on because it's covered up with a big white, it's more than a boa. It's like a white stole. Her legs are completely bare and there's something black around her midriff. I can't tell what it is. She has a very nice necklace on, very red lips, and dark hair on her, it's kind of close, wavy, I guess, up against her head, against a pearl background. And there's a picture in the museum here. It shows three standing pictures of her in completely different gowns, and then a gown on display in front. And it says the floor-length black velvet dress with an 18-inch waist that Ava Gardner wore for her role opposite Gregory Peck in 1949's The Great Sinner is on display at the Ava Gardner Museum in Smithfield. Overleaf, Nina Simone, 1933 to 2003. Eunice Catherine Wayman, the child prodigy who would come to be known as Nina Simone, grew up in a three-room clapboard house in Tryon. She started playing piano by ear when she was just 3 years old and began studying classical music at the age of six. Simone had dreams of becoming a classical pianist, but was denied entry to the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, due, she believed, to her race. Instead, she began performing in a nightclub in Atlantic City, New Jersey. Her rich voice and soulful fusion of classical blues, jazz, and gospel music quickly gained popularity, and she went on to record more than 40 albums. As a civil rights activist and feminist icon, Simone fearlessly used her music to support equality, with songs like Four Women and I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free. This picture here of Nina Simone's childhood home at 30 East Livingston Street in Tryon. It says her childhood home was saved from demolition, restored, and furnished by four New York artists who seek to honor her legacy by repurposing the property. So this house is built up on about 4 foot high brick pilings. And it has about six or seven steps going up to this white, completely white clapboard house with a nice little porch. And it says number 30 on the front of it. And actually looks like it has a dish antenna on the roof in the background. There's a picture of Nina at the piano here on the left, looking out at us with a microphone in front of her, and a picture of an organ with three pieces of music. Two of them are a Bach, and in the middle is a picture of her on perhaps a magazine cover or something. It says, "To be young, gifted, and black." And now, Salem Academy and College, founded in 1772. Salem Academy was founded by the Moravian Church in what is known today as Old Salem. It was the first school for girls and women in the country at a time when even many boys and men did not have access to a formal education. Early on, the academy was led by the Single Sisters, a group of unmarried, progressive, financially independent Moravian women. The school added college-level courses in the late 1800s and became Salem Academy and College in 1907. Today, the boarding and day school boasts a 100% college acceptance rate, while the liberal arts college offers more than 30 majors. Salem alumni include Guinness World Record holding long distance runner Sarah Covington Fulcher and U.S. Representative Tilly Fowler. This year, the school celebrates its 250th anniversary. They're at 601 South Street, Winston-Salem, salemacademy.com, and salem.edu. Says the Single Sisters House, built in 1785, is the country's longest-standing building continuously associated with female education. In 1904, seniors enjoyed the privilege of a senior study parlor. This is a black-and-white photo. Back in the day, 1904, all the women have long dresses on, dressed with high necks, and they go all the way down to the floor. Two of them are studying in chairs off to the left side. One is sitting on a bench on the right with a lot of pillows around her, and another one is on a rocker sitting next to her. And then there's a woman at the table in the center. She's got her elbows resting on the table, and the hands are up against her face as she's looking down at a book that she's reading. And there are some photographs around the room, and a heavily wallpapered yard, and wall, and an oriental carpet. And on the left-hand side is a much more modern group of young women, dressed a lot more modern, as you'd expect them to be today, laughing, talking with another outside of a dorm room, standing on brick pavers in front of the brick dormitories. St. Mary's School was founded in 1842. This Episcopal boarding and day school for girls and Raleigh's oldest continuously running educational institution. The largely wooded 23-acre high school campus, which formerly included a two-year college, features the East Rock and West Rock buildings, built with remnant stones from the construction of the state capitol. Students enjoy long-standing traditions, like singing the school hymn Arm in Arm in the Gothic style St. Mary's Chapel, a National Historic Site, and receiving their black onyx class rings at a formal banquet during their junior year. Notable alumni include Betty Ray McCain, the former Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Cultural Resources and the first female chair of the State Democratic Party, and Marie Waters Colton, the first female speaker pro tempore of the State House of Representatives and an inductee into the North Carolina Women's Hall of Fame. This is at 900 Hillsborough Street in Raleigh. Beautiful stone building with a long stone walkway going up to the stone stairs and double doors in front of it. Two-story high columns, a lot of columns, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 that I can see in this picture going up two stories high. And then there's some girls that are coming around the corner here on the campus, St. Mary's. All got smiles on their face. Happy to be there, I guess. Well, we're not happy. This is all the time we have for today's episode of Our State Magazine. Hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org, or on iTunes. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.